Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew, again.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1983 Bond film Octopussy, the second to last Roger Moore film in the canon.
I'm glad it's the second to last because he looks like he's about to die.
There's a little of that. So Brother Jay, introduce us to Octopussy.
Octopussy is a crazy, zany Indian women's circus adventure film that takes place also in Cold War Berlin.
Did you enjoy it?
I did. It's a fun movie. It's goofy and crazy and fun, and it's got some strange elements, and it was funny to recognize a couple actors, not the least of which was Steven Berkoff, who most recently I've seen in the remake of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
He was always be Victor Maitland. Always.
From Beverly Hills Cop.
Mm-hmm. Instant bad guy face.
Yeah. Well, he's got that dimple in his forehead, that divot or mole or whatever it is. So he's very, very distinctive.
He could do a full body pout also.
Yeah. He's got some eyebrow dexterity as well.
So, Drew, what's your initial reaction to Octopussy?
I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. It might be one of the most batshit, crazy Bond movies when you try and describe it, but it was pretty tight. It definitely has the best pacing of any Bond movie I've seen of the older ones.
Yeah, I agree. We have a lot to discuss as far as bad things, but overall I thought it was fine. It was formulaic, but that's okay. That's what Bond is. And it was a little heavy on the one-liners, but it's okay, because that's what Roger Moore is. And I don't know whether it's Roger Moore's fault or just the Roger Moore era. But, yeah, I thought it was just fine.
But it also turns out that so much is forgivable if they just move on. Just keep it going. We don't need a 9-minute chase scene. A 2-minute chase scene is perfect.
Exactly. Yeah, I think we're going to be hammering that point home in a lot of movies in the future with the Bond franchise, but yeah. So, Brother Jay, you want to start off with background on Octopussy? Or
it was budgeted about $27.5 million. It grossed about $67 million, so it did decently. It was over 2 hours long, so it's a pretty long Bond. There was a lot going on in this movie, and I got some extras. I had plenty of time to go through all the extra stuff.
Were you me talking tennis?
Yes, because there was actually a tennis star.
Yeah, indeed.
But mostly the extra stuff was really just that it was hotter than hell in India. Most of the filming, it averaged between 103 and 110 degrees while they were there.
That sounds unpleasant.
And during the hottest part, the 110 degree days is when they were doing all the jungle filming. But most notable is when they were filming in the jungle with elephants is, even though I think they do a lot of dubbing after the fact, they had to reshoot many of the scenes because they kept having giant elephant farts that were disrupting the filming to the point where the actors were not able to hear the dialogue well enough to be able to sync over it.
What are you thinking about? So, we finally got our elephants after ordering 200 elephant shoes
That's what I wrote a note. I wonder if they got to use the elephant shoes.
Yeah, it turns out they. I don't think they did, and I don't think the people that made the special order elephant shoes ever got paid for them. So, which is
that would be a bummer.
Yeah, kind of sad. So, what do we think of the cold open? It takes place at some unidentified Latin American country.
I thought it was interesting. He has a fancy reversible jacket.
You know, that's what I actually, the most consistent piece of spy gadgetry that Bond has is reversible clothing.
Yeah, which is used.
He is constantly reversing his clothing.
Yeah, which is a spy trick.
I hated this cold open.
But I had a problem with the military dudes on the back of the truck. They're on the back of the truck. Why the hell would they have parachutes on?
There's that. There's that. We're not even talking about a fake horse.
Well, and the tiny personal jet that comes from the horse's ass. And I meant to look this up and I forgot. I totally spaced it. But there's a exploding hangar that looks, and to my recollection, it may be faulty because my memory is full of holes these days. But to my recollection, the exploding hangar in the beginning of the movie looks remarkably like part of the exploding hangar, which I believe is we're going to see in the Living Daylight. Which is Timothy Dalton.
Oh, that'd be great if they reused an exploding hangar.
Well, I don't think it's identical, but it just, it's very similar in...
Like it has the same like signature?
It looks very similar. So, I don't know if it's supposed to be homage or it's just copy.
So, if you're in a hangar and you get freaked out by a little plane flying into the hangar, your reaction would never, ever, ever be close the doors.
Especially when the hangar apparently is full of tons of explosives.
Right. There's a flying bomb in here and we're sitting on all these drums of fuel. Close the doors.
Yeah. Yeah. And drums of fuel and the explosives that Bond brought into the game and then they confiscated from him.
Well, they're henchmen. No one said they're smart.
I kind of liked the jet scene because, I think Drew, you hit it on the head. It was fairly short. Like, he could have spent 3 or 4 more minutes dodging that missile had they wanted to.
I was surprised there was no skiing.
Well, yeah, it's skiing. And were there no actual boat chases, were there?
No. He escaped on a boat.
Yeah, there's boats involved. There's water involved, but they don't have speedboat races. Although we have our first tuk-tuk race, right?
With an actual souped-up engine to the point it was a full 10 horsepower.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it is a company car. So we go from the cold open...
to Rita Coolidge.
Does it go Rita Coolidge before we get to the clowns?
Yes.
Okay, so we get Rita Coolidge, which is, you know, I think probably at the time... the opening, projected red lights on the models and stuff was pretty high zoot.
It was a pretty cool opening for the time.
And the song is fine.
Yeah.
Totally forgettable. I actually cannot remember the song right now.
But not awful.
Oh, it's an all-time high.
Okay. Yep.
At least they didn't try to wedge, like, Tom Jones in there was singing something that, you know, and then trying to rhyme Octopussy.
That actually bummed me out. I wanted to hear a theme song that had Octopussy in it.
Yeah, I want to know where they were going to wedge that
in. If you're going to have a ridiculous movie title, you need to have a commensurate song.
It's her little Octopussy.
Well, here is the question. Why did they have the ridiculous title?
Because she's the focal character.
Yeah, but...
No. It's just so that people had to say pussy.
I guess. Because they could have called it Property of a Lady. I think that's what the short story is based on, right?
I was going to say this probably has something to do with Broccoli and Fleming, but he wasn't really involved at this point.
Was Fleming alive at this point?
I don't think so. I
think so, yeah. But, I mean, Broccoli was. He was unencumbered by Saltzman. He was on his own now. So, yeah, so he could do whatever he wanted. And he wanted to name it Octopussy, which, by the way, was clunky throughout the whole movie, don't you think? There's no reason for her to be named Octopussy. They could have kept with the mollusk theme, but they never have to say Octopussy. It's ridiculous. And the fact that we get another circus named after the lady is weird. I was wondering if Drew, did you not appreciate the clown so early on?
You know, I find clowns to be particularly creepy. You know what else I find to be creepy? Twins. I find identical twins to be very creepy. So, yeah, thank you, Octopussy, for giving me a scene where there are creepy twins chasing a creepy clown. It was great.
The creepy clown who, even though running from captors, or not captors, but running from people who intend to kill him, I could see where he wouldn't have time to jettison the floppy shoes, but he could have released all the balloons.
How would they find him then?
Yeah, how would you just be able to see him in the water shot? Yeah, so we have we get a creepy chase scene with a clown being pursued by twin knife throwers. And he shows up at the British Embassy and dies holding a Fabergé egg.
Well, he dies dropping a Fabergé egg.
Yes.
They had to find a section of the Berlin Wall and put graffiti on it so that they could film it and make it look like it was still East Germany.
When did the wall fall?
91?
Yeah, so...
Well, they couldn't film it in East Germany, so they had to find a wall in West Germany and paint it.
So that's an interesting start. And then we have the Fabergé egg as a MacGuffin. I guess it's fine as a MacGuffin. It's a little weird, but oh well.
Because then we roll into General Gogol and Orlov having their little pissing match.
Yes, in a very expensive boardroom.
You guys don't have a meeting room with a rotating set of chairs?
No, we have swivel chairs.
Oh.
It's the
why doesn't the floor just rotate?
It's like, you know, NASA spending $1 million to make a pen that can write in zero gravity and the Russians solved it by using a pencil.
True story.
You know, they can't always be perfect. But I'm sure it was a very expensive set. Or maybe not. Maybe they just had the big old turntable hanging around on pine wood and they could just paint up some Soviet walls or something.
Maybe they just reused some of the ones from the sub in the previous movie and they just used the track on its side.
Ah, there you go.
Luckily, it's been repurposed for the Broadway set of Hamilton.
Oh. So, does General Olaf sound less Russian and more German?
Yes.
I was waiting for him to click his heels together at the end of his little speech.
Jawohl.
Because he's actually seriously proposing that they have a tank battle across Europe, which seems so quaint.
Total victory in 5 days. Yeah. Under every possible scenario. They ran it.
Sure. Of course they did.
Well, I'm sure they had a supercomputer chug out the numbers.
Oh, they're going to make Mexico pay for it, too. It'll work out fine. We have a brand new M, Robert Brown. We have Penelope Smallbone, because they're phasing Money Penny out.
Ridiculous.
Apparently, Penelope Smallbone was named after a real person.
Oh. I was thinking it was some Roger Moore reference, but guess not.
Let's see, we meet General Orlov, Stephen Burkoff. We have the proposition of a tank war, which is great. And then we end up at Sotheby's for an auction of a Fabergé egg.
Where he does the most clumsy, obvious sleight of hand swap.
Yeah, it is the worst.
To smoke out Kamal.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, he's doing an incredible fraud. That you think Sotheby's would have some sort of, like, I don't know, they'd be wise to those kind of shenanigans, but oh well.
Yeah, one might think you'd be pretty perceptive.
Yeah, several times he just tucks his Fabergé egg up into the sleeve of his suit coat at various times in this movie, which seems very uncomfortable.
You think it's the arm of his suit coat? Or maybe he's smuggling it Pulp Fiction style?
God only knows. Clearly, the art expert is too happy to be there. He is hamming it up a little bit. In a good way. I was happy with it.
Well, he had to earn his money.
Yeah, he's having a good time. That's for sure. And that's where we get our first glimpse of Kamil Khan, Louis Jourdan.
He's a pretty good villain.
Yeah. Yeah, very good villain. I liked it.
And Forehead Lady wasn't too bad either.
Magda, played by Christina Weyborn. Yeah, she was fine. Yeah. Actually, I thought all the performances in this movie were pretty good. I mean, maybe we'll get to some later, but I think for the most part, I'm pretty happy with it. So we end up finding out that Kamal Khan has to buy the Fabergé egg so that nobody finds out that it's a fake. Or no, he's got to buy it because it's the real one. He's got to get it back in the hands of the Russians. Because it's all a plan of... How is this supposed to work? Orloff was selling fakes to raise money for off-the-book stuff?
I don't know. There was a nuclear bomb in a circus.
There's that, yes. Turned out the Fabergé egg they had has a homing device in it, blah, blah, blah. Later, we do get a nice view of Q in Delhi, which, you know, at this point, we realize that Q has a bunch of ridiculous things, and he just takes them everywhere he goes.
He does. He has the most mobile murder factory ever.
Yeah, and they're not, there are not all good ideas.
Well, it's field research.
I suppose, but for every liquid crystal television on you can wear on your wrist.
That's what happens when you give everybody participation medals. Everybody gets a chance to try everything out.
To try their magic Indian rope?
Yeah. And then make several terrible double entendres about old man and sex.
How about having a door full of nails? You're like, oh, this door looks weird. I'm going to go ahead and ring the doorbell anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
I know, I'd kind of love that door.
But actually, before that, I skipped ahead a little bit. Because before that, we have to meet, we go to Delhi.
VJ.
To track down, and we get to meet VJ, played by VJ Amritaj? Amritaji? Anyway, he's a very famous tennis player in 1983.
That's why he couldn't act.
Well, yeah, he couldn't act, and he always had a tennis racket around, and it was featured prominently in a chase scene.
He really seemed just happy to be there.
Yeah. This is fine, like I said. We meet the Khan's bodyguard, Gobinda. He's played by Kabir Bedi. Bedi. He's fine. He's a heavy.
So, VJ was, by the way, in Star Trek IV.
Really?
What did he do in Star Trek IV?
In the beginning of... He was a starship captain in the beginning of Star Trek IV, if you remember when the weird entity was killing all the ships. And the first...
first 3 minutes?
Yeah. It was the ship. So they were trying to rig a solar sail. That was him.
Wow.
So the only thing worse than wearing a red shirt is being an actor of color.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, they didn't put prosthetic wrinkles on his forehead.
No, they didn't make him look like a vagina face.
I know you probably don't have much familiarity, but it's not exactly right.
Moving on. Let's see. Oh, we have backgammon, which is our gambling of choice this time.
Yeah, no baccarat. Sorry, dude.
Nope. Sweevy. But instead, we have backgammon with loaded dice, which anybody should have known from a million miles away.
No kidding.
The loaded dice were as subtle as the sleight of hand at Sotheby's.
Also, the backgammon made no sense.
It came complimentary with your room. You got a complimentary backgammon game by being a member.
No, but I mean that, like, the actual game itself, like how they were playing, it made no sense if you know the rules of backgammon. Much like the poker in Casino Royale. It's sort of very stylized and dramatic, but wouldn't ever actually happen.
Yeah, it really didn't follow any rules of gameplay.
Yeah, well, backgammon was a hot thing for a while.
Was it?
I love backgammon.
Yeah, me too, but I don't remember being hot.
Well, no, I mean, people play backgammon for money, like they play gin rummy for money in some places in Matt Dillon movies. That the Flaming O Kid?
Except that, isn't that, you know, not all movies are real.
Okay, I'm just saying. Anyway, so we meet Magda again, Christina Weyborn, who is the first Bond girl, and she sleeps with Bond right away and steals his egg after some double entendre.
She did some Cirque du Soleil move out of the hotel room.
Yes. Explain later that she's somehow affiliated with the circus. And we find out she has a tattoo of an octopussy.
Mm-hmm. It was a really bad temporary tattoo. It was starting to flake off as they were filming.
It was good for the time.
I suppose.
It was 103 degrees.
Well, and, you know, I'm sure the Cracker Jacks were tasty.
And they probably all melted into a big glob. Just one big Cracker Jack.
Yum. Glob. Yeah, like a popcorn ball. So we have this, you know, Khan wants to kill Bond after he gets all the information out of him. And it's all like a very well-mannered for a Bond villain.
Yeah, because they kidnap Bond after they escape with the egg. For some reason. If they're going to kidnap him, he didn't need to make an escape, but.
Yeah. Well, again, they, you know, as in every movie, they could have killed him at any point in the story.
Yes.
Because he is not secret in anything he does. Now, the I don't know whether this is true or not. Jason can fact check this one. But apparently, obviously, Q has supplied him with exactly the right amount of gadgets to get out of the very specific trouble he gets into.
Yes.
Including the combination of acids that will melt through any metal.
Yes.
Now, when he melts to the bars and wrenches them out of the way, my IMDb trivia says that they play the Superman theme.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Didn't catch that.
What I noticed instead was that the ability to which he is able to bend those bars, he probably could have bent all of the bars out of enough shape to break out. He didn't need the acid anyway.
Oh, I forgot. When we meet Vijay, we break the fourth wall. Because Vijay is a snake charmer. He's pretending to be a snake charmer, playing his little flute thingy. And he plays the James Bond theme that Bond recognizes. Even though, theoretically, spy agencies don't have actual theme songs. But maybe. Maybe they have, like, fight songs.
That's where that's where Vijay admits that he's a prostitute for gold sovereigns.
Yes. And he hates snakes.
Oh, okay. Yes. I missed that. That explains, like, the weird shoulder rubbing later.
Yeah. That was some weird, strange, like, was he out to seduce Bond? Was he trying to get into his pants?
That is my interpretation of this movie. Vijay was in love with Bond.
Yeah, it really was some strange kind of, I want in your pants, dude.
Oh, he picked the wrong Bond. If it had been Daniel Craig, he would have happened.
What?
Isn't Daniel Craig the Bond that does gay stuff?
What are you talking about? Have you hit your head?
I think those are parodies, Eric.
Are you reading fan fiction?
No, I mean specifically Skyfall, but oh well.
Subject is not approved for field duty and immediate suspension from service advised. What is this if not betrayal? She sent you off to me knowing you're not ready, knowing you will likely die.
Mommy was very bad.
Ooh. See what she's done to you.
Well, she never tied me to a chair.
Her loss.
Are you sure this is about M?
It's about her. And you and me. You see, we are the last two rats. We can either eat each other, or eat everyone else. How you're trying to remember your training now? What's the regulation to cover this? Well, first time for everything. Yes.
What makes you think this is my first time?
Oh, Mr. Bond.
Anyway.
Good Lord. Are you reading some more of those weird guys audiobooks that I don't know about?
Reading them? I'm writing them. Remember? We're putting out a collection.
I forgot.
I found an audiobook today, new on Audible, that is How to Outsmart Squirrels. A 5-hour audiobook, How to Outsmart Squirrels.
Really?
Did you get a copy for Dad?
Hopefully it's... It's mostly humor, but you can't really tell.
Are you having problems with squirrels?
I'm not, but I love to look at new Audible books. It started with Chuck Tingle, but it continues. Also, there is an audio book of like 25 crochet patterns. Now, I don't know about you, but I think... visually impaired crochet artists need audiobooks to tell them about patterns, but it seems very, very boring listening if you're not
also actually seems crocheting. Like an incredible niche audience.
Yeah, well, you know, the cost of publishing is low these days. So we'll retreat out of our proposed Bond fiction.
So Bond is kidnapped and brought to the lair.
Kamal Khan's lair. Yeah, I actually liked kind of the stealthing around that Bond did after he escaped. It was like real spy stuff.
True, but he made up for it when he ran into the jungle and did non-real spy stuff where he tells a tiger, like, shh.
Do you mean where he does a Tarzan impersonation?
Yes, he actually does a Tarzan and swings from a vine.
So ridiculous.
Yes. But we actually, I forgot, during our tuk-tuk chase, which actually I thought was just fine. It was fun. It was like an Indiana Jones kind of fun serial moment.
It was clever, but they pass every cliche circus carny act that you could have. The walking on coals, the sword in the stomach, and all of that business.
Oh, yeah. That's just day in the life of Delhi.
Bond lives in a world of stereotypes.
Exactly.
So it fits. It fits with other stuff.
Yeah. They actually make a mention that Bond loves eggs in this movie, which was I thought was hilarious because if you remember from reading that one book that we all read.
All he ate was eggs.
Just scrambled eggs. Couldn't trust anything else. He is a finicky eater. I mean, granted, I wouldn't eat a
sheep's head.
The eyeballs or whatever, but.
Yeah. Oh. Which Kamal really dug the fake eyeball.
That was great. It's a great scene. He loved it. He's French, though, so they eat stuff like that.
It was nearly the same level of audio detail as Nurse Diesel in the fruit cup from High Anxiety.
Well, what I was going to say is during the tuk-tuk race, they make their improbable jump over a camel. They have the shot of the camel looking, following them. Also, you see when Vijay starts fighting off the other tuk-tuk, the crowd starts to look back and forth as if they're watching a tennis match. And we get the sounds of a tennis ball being hit by a racket.
It was so cheesy.
Yes, yes. Well, that's how I felt about the jungle escape. It was also very cheesy.
Oh, the jungle escape was entirely cheesy. It was like it was Kraft dinner macaroni and cheese, fake cheesy cheese. It was that powdery orange stuff.
But it's all fine because they didn't linger.
True.
They kept it moving. It's fine.
Except there was one thing that would have made Bond's escape even better on the tour bus, on the tour boat.
Yes, exactly. Yes, tell us what that is. If a passenger on the tour boat had been
C.W. Pepper.
No, sorry. J.W. Pepper.
J.W. Pepper, sorry. Where did I get C from?
C.S. Lewis.
No. Okay. Possible.
Doubtful, but oh well. C. Everett Koop. C. Thomas Howell. C. Jane Rund. Whatever. So, next.
This is the elephant hunt, Bond in the jungle, real tiger, real elephants.
Yes.
And that's where I wrote, I wonder if they ever used elephant shoes. And then Tarzan, leeches, and crocodiles. And then I said, will there be a J.W. Pepper on the tour boat? Question mark. And then comes Vijay trying to rub James Bond's shoulders. Super sexy, creepy.
He's not trying. He is.
Yeah. He really commits.
Yeah, he was going to town. He looks so happy, too.
And, yeah, he's trying to get to the, you know, the happy ending of this movie. Yeah. And then Bond had his little croc sub.
I loved his croc sub.
So in this movie, he's been in the inside of a horse and in the inside of a crocodile.
Yes.
It's great.
And soon he's going to be inside an octopussy.
Oh yeah. So tell me about Octopussy. So she lives in this mysterious island, and she's a smuggler, and there's only women allowed on the island, and she runs an all-woman circus.
The island is off the coast of India, but all of her minions are dressed like the greatest American hero.
They are. They are indeed exactly like the greatest American hero.
Very, well, she has them in training for the traveling circus.
Yeah. Is that their circus uniforms, or is it just their everyday uniform? I mean, around the pool, they seem to be in all different kinds of dress and undress.
You want them to be comfortable in training.
No, those are their end-of-movie battle uniforms.
Well, we find out that they're not only circus performers, but we find out that they're a group of trained assassins. She is, like, a leader of a ninja army.
Smugglers, but also into hotels and the circus.
Of course.
She's diversified.
She is. Well, that's good. It's good to be diversified. And her father turns out to be a former British spy or some kind of spy that Bond was supposed to take in, but Bond let him have like 24 hours to settle his affairs, and he killed himself. So he could
die with dignity.
Yeah. So apparently suicide is dignified in some countries more than others.
But she has a great aquarium with upside down catfish.
Oh, she's got a great aquarium. And, you know, I liked Maude Adams. I thought she was great.
Yeah, she was pretty good.
She's all right. Her big emotional moment was very weird because she got angry like out of nowhere and stormed out. And it, I don't know, it just didn't click. It was a very odd scene.
Well, she was head and shoulders above Barbara Bach.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, she was just trying to set the stage for the saw blade yo-yo.
Yes. And did you see that the guy with the yo-yo actually got seriously hurt during that stunt?
No.
He fell off the balcony, but he pled, even though he was had to go to the hospital and stuff, he pled to continue filming the rest of his scenes because I think he was worried about not getting paid.
So when Bond pulled him off, that wasn't a planned stunt?
Yeah, I think they probably did the... They used the second take of him falling on the bed because the first take of him falling and breaking half of his ribs and his neck was probably a little too graphic for the time.
too gruesome.
He set the wrong tone.
And Vijay never got to consummate his relationship with Bond.
No.
Or at least Bond's back.
Yeah, so they end up having a big scene because Kamal Khan had hired these rogue pirate guys to come in and attack Octopussy's lair and kill Bond. But, you know, of course, since she's got a island full of ninja.
Have I mentioned how old Roger Moore looks in this movie?
Yeah. Although I thought some of the fighting scenes looked actually pretty good. I mean, the choreography was a little better in this movie than in some of the other ones.
Well, he wasn't in a lot of the action either.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's definitely no George Lazenby.
But at this point, you know, I said, from my opinion, Maude Adams is decently hot in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's probably, like, up there as far as Bond girls, at least at this point.
Yeah.
And now when we're going to get to Tanya Roberts here pretty soon, and that may change my opinion of everything, but...
But after they're humping it out in the yo-yo scene, Vijay, you know, dies. Find out Vijay dies after his yo-yo incident on the other side of the river.
He was still alive when Q found him, though. And his last words were, "Tell James I love him."
It's very touching.
And then with a gasp, he said, "Game, set, and match."
Well done.
Oh.
I was going to say love 15.
Yes. Sad.
It's more subtle. I like it.
Or perhaps deuce. Perhaps Avantage Bond.
God. No, keep going. Sorry,
couldn't help myself.
No, that's great. you are turning into me. That's I'm just going to warn. Interrupting and doing puns is great. I love it.
Oh, Heidi, we have to have a tiebreaker.
I was trying to figure out if I could do a Jewish accent and make a joke about how it's the whole town is called Delhi, but you can't get a good corned beef sandwich. It turns out I can't.
Yeah, I was going to say, good luck pulling that off.
No, I can't. And again, the movie is easier. Drew, you said this before, but I think you're absolutely right. It's much more fun than it is easy to explain.
Well, yeah, because there's a lot going on, and it doesn't slow down. Because you basically go to...
We have another train fight.
Oh no! It's flat out nonsense.
Like, yeah, the train plot fight of this
movie is nonsense.
And then the show being bombed, you know, the car chase to get Bond to the train, him stuck in the back of the Volkswagen with the Germans, the German kids that make fun of him,
which is I found surprisingly funny, even though it was ridiculous. I mean. You could not have excused that in a Daniel Craig Bond movie.
Oh, I don't know.
They were tripling down on the stereotypes.
But, well, and so What is Orlov's master plan? He's going to set off a bomb in an American air base or base of some kind.
Right.
In Germany.
On the American air base.
So, and they'll set off the bomb, and it'll appear.
And it's going to look, it'll look like it's an accident because the signature is going to look like an American bomb. And so it'll look like a nuclear accident caused by the Americans being there. And it'll drive nuclear proliferation out of Europe because the Europeans won't like it. Because they already are pretty environmentally conscious. This is just one more piece of Western occupation. So they will eschew all kinds of nuclear weapons, technology, and defenses. And once that happens, then the Eastern Bloc can rush in and take over because they've been working on fortifying all of their border postings.
So this is where the tank war comes in because there's no nuclear threat at that point.
Exactly.
Right, and all this is connected to the circus and the Fabergé eggs because.
Exactly.
Well, they need the money. They need the money to finance it with.
And we have the human cannonball plays a big part in the circus, as in any circus, really. I liked his suit. Someday I want the human cannonball suit. It would look silly on me because I am not the human cannonball shape, but. Just picture Newman from Seinfeld wearing that suit. You know, you get the idea.
We're all picturing it right now.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. I didn't say picture it and touch yourself. That's wrong. It's wrong. So
it's not like we're VJ touching Bond.
No, no. Although if you close your eyes, there. So,
yeah, you can smell the Bengay.
Okay, so this is a movie where Bond. Bond swings on a vine like Tarzan, and he also is in a gorilla suit, and he's dressed as a clown.
To stop a bomb.
Yes, yes.
You know, got a bomb. I kind of appreciated the gorilla suit because a few years ago I read this book by this ex-Special Forces operative. And he was talking about some of the crazier missions he'd been on across the world. And he was part of a group that was paired up with like advanced scientists to just try and think up crazy shit to bring into existence.
Like DARPA?
Like that, but very focused on like special operations.
This wasn't, by the way, Richard Marchenko, is it?
No.
Okay.
No. And he was talking about one of their missions that he was involved in the planning on, and he said, like most of them, they never executed the mission because the circumstances changed before they had all their planning complete. I guess that happens more often than you would think, but makes sense. But their mission was a snatch and grab of a high priority target in not the Middle East, but like the Afghanistan region. And it was somebody who was off the grid and they got intelligence that he was going to be traveling from one place to another. And he traveled in a convoy. So they were trying to figure out how to stop the convoy so that they could grab him. And, you know, he was being driven by highly trained bodyguards, so they knew that they couldn't just like put somebody on the side of the road, you know, waving for assistance, because they would just drive right by anything that smelled like it could be a trap. So they were thinking, they're trying to think of what they could possibly do to get the caravan to at least slow down enough for them to shoot essentially a souped up grappling hook into the side of one of the doors. I think they figured out they needed to get him to slow down to about 25 miles an hour. And what they came up with was they needed to come up with a distraction that was so off the wall that it would at least get the driver's attention enough for him to slow down. So they were developing like the most realistic looking gorilla suit to put a dude in. To have a gorilla walking across the road, because they figured that would be distracting enough to get the driver to slow down just for a couple seconds. And all that went through my head when I saw Bond in the gorilla suit in this movie.
Wow.
Yeah, excellent. What's the name of the book?
I have to look. It's called, it's something like The Men, The Mission, and Me.
If that's not it, I will find a Chuck Tingle book with a similar title and just put that in the notes.
By it's Pete been about Labor.
Oh, you found it? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's Lessons from a Former Delta Force Commander.
Yeah.
It's on Audible.
Yeah, I read it. What was I? I think I was on the North Slope about 9 years ago when I read it.
So, back to the movie. What we have is this elaborate thing where the bomb is being smuggled aboard, or in the human cannonball, actually. In the cannon, not the man who's a human cannonball. And Octopussy thinks it's smuggling jewels, but it's really this nuclear device. And so Orloff is going to kill everybody, including Octopussy. And Bond is trying to get... By the way, this base has the worst security ever.
No kidding. They just let people drive through their gate.
Yeah, like, he should have been shot 19 times before he got to the circus tent, but he also should have been shot several times in the circus tent.
Well, you know, in a pre-9/11 world, there is no reason for security.
I suppose. Do you think the base commander would have somebody...
Can you explain something to me? Because I didn't follow this at all. So Bond confronts Orloff on the train, and then Orloff makes a getaway, and the train is headed for the base. Bond's trying to stop the train. At some point, Orloff is shot running after the train. Why? Why was he running after the train?
Well, I think he wanted to stop Bond from being able to defuse the bomb.
But Bond at this point was nowhere near the train. It doesn't really matter.
But it was the train was the means to the end. If mm-hmm. Bond was able to get on the train, he was able to get to the bomb and then stop it.
Okay, so here's what the summary says. It's the train stopped at the east-west German border, and the border guards from both countries searched the train, finding neither Bond in the gorilla suit or the bomb in the stage cannon. When the train resumes, Orloff drives to the border and attempts to flee on the train by chasing it on foot. He's trying to catch the train. Like, he can't be on the train when it's going across the border. Does that make sense in any way?
Wow.
Well, anyway, Orloff gets shot at this point. So, I'm sorry. So it's really Khan who's going to kill everybody in the circus tent.
Yeah.
Because he gets summoned away at the last minute and tries to drive away.
That was a really nice touch when he's trying to make his getaway and for a second the car wouldn't start.
Yeah, there's a lot of little touches that are kind of fun. But yeah, I mean, some of this is Yakety Sax territory. Mm-hmm. So this is where we have Khan is back at his headquarters or whatever. And Octopussy uses her set of ninja to infiltrate the palace and subdue Khan's men. But Octopussy gets captured by Khan. And Khan gets into a plane with her and takes off. And that's where we figured out that this wasn't... for some reason, I thought the scene where Tom Cruise hangs onto the outside of an airplane in the latest Mission Impossible movie was something special. No, Bond did this 30 years ago.
You skipped over all the fighting with the minions and the circus performers sure. And Khan's men.
Yeah, yada yada a lot of that, because that's one of the things that, at least in my opinion, you kind of have to see to believe.
Yeah, but you get to see all the sisters kicking butt.
Oh, yeah. No, it's good. And it's lots of, like, circus trickery and...
These women are kicking ass and taking names.
And their signature move is to do, like, a handspring and hit the dudes in the face with their crotch.
Well, of course. You got to have a signature move.
There are at least four of those.
I'm sorry. I also was yada-yadding a balloon.
Like a Yukon Jack hot air balloon, right?
Yes.
Very stealthy.
Yeah. Again, it's good. It's interesting. It's fun. It's goofy, but it's fun. And then we have the airplane thing, which
Before that, you get that on-ass banister slide. Down where Bond gets the machine gun in the end so he doesn't castrate himself.
Yeah, yeah. It's just never try a banister slide, people.
Which is where they end up in the horse race after, and I wrote here, no skis?
And he checks. After he gets off the banister, he checks to make sure everything's okay. It was really quick. Another little touch.
No, you're right. And I yada yada the whole horse race thing, too. I had forgotten about that.
And Octopussy suffers about 9 concussions in 3 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I know earlier episodes of the podcast, I was particularly worried about head injuries with characters in movies, and now I've given up. Like, anytime you see, somebody do the Captain Cook karate chop to knock somebody unconscious, to realize, okay, that does come with consequences in the real world, but we're not in the real world, so it's fine.
Did you mean Captain Kirk?
What did I say?
Captain Cook.
Oh. Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, Captain James Cook of the Royal Navy never.
Yes, Captain. Hotel Captain Kirk.
Thank you.
Can I just mention that the turban dude was like the best henchman ever in the history of the world?
How so?
Because
he just kept Khan's going.
Like, and Khan's like, hey, he's on the outside of the plane. Go get him.
It's true. Yes. Yes.
And the henchman's like,
okay.
What, are you serious? Oh. Well, okay. I guess I'll go climb outside the plane. And I'll be killed in the most ridiculous way possible. He got flicked in the face and died.
Then, so we have a fight on the outside of a plane in flight. And up high, too. Not like super low to the ground, but up a good amount.
Yeah, that stuntman falls off the plane.
Well, and then we have the plane crash that they narrowly avert getting killed themselves by just jumping out of the plane before it hits the ground. Which is always what you should do if you have the option.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Totally fine.
If only the crew of the space shuttle Challenger had thought of that before they hit the ground, but they hadn't seen this Bond movie.
It's too soon.
What color eyes were Christy McCullough's?
No. No. Thank you for channeling Dad there for a moment, but no.
Okay. So Bond is apparently, theoretically, he's very seriously injured in this. Octopussy's not injured at all.
Well, she can't feel anything anymore because she's had 9 concussions.
She got to roll over James's oiled back from VJ's massage, so.
It wasn't oil. So, Bond is having a bed rest or whatever. He's all trussed up in attraction, but turns out he's just faking. He's a malingerer.
Just faking it.
Yep. So he turns his traction into a sex swing, and he and Octopussy just do it as the credits roll.
8 times.
To the most memorable theme song ever.
I've already forgotten that. It's replaced in my head with Nobody Does It Better. But I believe it's an all-time high. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, just wait. View to a Kill.
Okay. Is that Madonna?
No. No! Madonna's Die Another Day.
Hold on. Tina Turner?
No.
Grace Jones?
No.
Cher?
Grace Jones is in View to a Kill, okay. But no.
All right.
Duran Duran.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I can actually hear the song in my head right now.
Go ahead, sing it. About it. Give us a couple.
Nope.
Nope. 1, 2, 3.
Not going to happen.
What's the name of the song?
A View to a Kill.
Okay. It's a little on the nose.
Avi.
Well, this theme should have been, instead of All Time High, it should have been called Octopussy. So what can you do?
Yeah.
So any more notes on fun stuff in the movie?
Nope. Actual tennis star, 103 to 110 degrees, and elephant farts.
Yeah.
And was this released at roughly the same time as Never Say Never Again, or were they I know they were released in the same year, but were they actually competing against each other?
Let's see. This was released... Let's see. So this was June 10th of 83.
Summer blockbuster.
And Never Say Never, October 7th.
Mm. Oh, okay. So no.
And Never Say Never had a bigger budget and grossed less.
Ouch.
Yeah. Now, have we figured out a way to watch Never Say Never again? Do we have it anyplace?
Not yet.
Okay. All right. We'll figure that one out. Because we should add it.
It's a long wait on Netflix.
So, Brother Jay, your verdict?
This is a fun movie. It's a silly movie. Doesn't get too serious, with the exception of some murdering of his tennis star. It's a B minus. It's a good solid Bond film in comparison to what we've seen to date.
Drew, was it worth it?
Yes. This is the best Roger Moore Bond movie I've seen. I mean, it is utter nonsense, but it's not as self-indulgent or even self-referential as some of the others. And the pacing is great. So, you know, it doesn't linger on the annoying stuff. It just keeps moving. And it tries just about everything. Everything is in this movie. And it's fine. The stuff that doesn't work, it's fine because they keep moving. And the stuff that does work, it's fun. And it has Victor Maitland in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's worth it.
Sweet.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I liked it, too. I thought it was fun. I thought it was, I mean, there were some groaning parts to it. But, yeah, I mean, considering, yeah, I think a B- is a totally fair grade. And I think it was worth it also. Plus, I mean, you've now renewed your faith in Bond, Drew. That's worth the whole thing.
Yeah, I was prepared to hate this movie. Especially after the cold open, which is terrible. But yeah, no, it was a good time.
Yeah, well,
and once you realize you don't really have to be paying attention to what's going on, it's fine.
I think that's what going to be good advice. We'll see if the tone shifts when we get to Timothy Dalton and Pierce Brosnan. Because there's definitely a tone shift in the Daniel Craig, but I haven't seen the rest of them in a long time, if ever, some of those movies.
There's a shift in the Dalton for sure, because it goes back to a little more serious Bond, serious-ish Bond.
Well, because this was a more serious Bond compared to the Bond that dropped Blofeld down a chimney stack or whatever.
Yeah, fill her up. Come on.
Okay, there's that. Okay, so another question. Never Say Never Again, we should probably throw in the calendar, but are we going to at some point tackle the Austin Powers movies?
Oh, I would love to.
Because sure. Comedies are not necessarily great fodder for podcast material, as we found out. But I think they'll have enough Bond references in there that it'll make it fun to talk about.
We're going to have to do two of them at a time.
Yeah, how many of them are there?
Three.
Yeah, well, we can figure it out. Can I start housekeeping?
Please.
Yeah. Okay. Because I just have some movies that I watched recently that I wanted to talk about just briefly. Have either of you seen Eli Roth's movie Aftershock?
Now I feel like every girl I meet, I have to download some new app. What happened to meeting a girl in the park and saying, hey, how about a cup of coffee?
Don't worry, Gringo. We're taking you to a nice park where you can ask a girl for coffee. Trust me.
This place is awesome. It's like the indie station of Latin America. That's the real Chile.
Prison collapse. Prisoners are everywhere.
No.
Actually, I don't even know. He didn't direct it. He stars in it. I think he produced it. But it's interesting. It's kind of what I want from an Eli Roth kind of horror movie. It takes place in Chile, and there's an earthquake. That's pretty much all you need to know. But it's got some characters that are fun, and so I thought it was a successful horror movie. Don't think too hard. It's kind of bloody. Not as bloody as like Hostel or some of the other Eli Roth movies, but it's worth looking at. So Aftershock. I saw the original Universal's The Invisible Man with Claude Rains.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was the second time I tried to watch it. The first time I tried to watch it, I couldn't do it. It was just too... Like, the Invisible Man himself is not sympathetic. But once I figured out that was kind of the point, I had a better time. It's okay. It's, you know, you don't get much of Claude Rains because, of course, he's the Invisible Man, so he's covered up or invisible the whole time. And
funny how that works.
Yeah. And you get some really hammy acting from the innkeepers and the people, the townspeople that he holds up in this inn while he tries to finish his research. So it's interesting. I mean, it's I think a lot of those Universal monster movies, you know, are obviously dated since they were in the 30s, but it's probably worth watching just for history, but I wouldn't put it on my list of my favorites. I watched the Rob Zombie movie 31.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, tonight we are going to play 31.
Is it hunting time now?
You want to see something funny?
I should apologize in advance for not sharpening this thing.
Crunch. And I know I'm not alone in this, but I always want to like a Rob Zombie movie. Because he's got a certain thing that he does really well. Like, he knows how to get the style right in a movie. Unfortunately, the plot is not super great. It's basically just setting up a bunch of his redneck heroes, including his wife, of course, who's in every movie, against these like batshit crazy villains in this like closed environment, kind of, and then there were none sort of thing. And it would all be super forgettable, and I would hate it, except that Richard Brake plays the main bad guy, and he is just really good. He's just really... I really like the character. The character is very rich. It's kind of got a Joker kind of quality to it. I would rate it way better than The Lords of Salem, and better than either the Halloween remakes, but I still think The Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses are better. And eventually I will find a Rob Zombie movie that, besides House of a Thousand Corpses, well, even that or The Devil's Rejects, I don't like any of those movies all the way through. I thought there's some really brilliant things they do, but it's just not great. And then the other mainstream movie I watched that you guys, one of you actually, either of you may have actually seen, is the Sandra Bullock, Billy Bob Thornton, Our Brand is Crisis.
She is the brightest and most innovative.
The best campaign strategist in the game.
Responsible for the greatest political upset in history.
You're a fighter, Jane. I'm giving you another shot at the title.
It's a presidential campaign in South America. Fragile democracy, economy in real trouble. Our candidate is considered arrogant and out of touch with people's lives.
How far are you behind?
28 points.
The opposition has hired their own American, Pat Candy.
Jane Bodine.
Pat?
So what are you doing here? I thought you retired or gave up or something.
What happened to your hair?
So you still got a great sense of humor.
How many times have you gone against Candy?
3 or 4 times.
How many times has he beat you?
3 or 4 times.
If you want to win, we're going to have to take risks. You're my tracker. Every event that Rivera attends, every speech, you tape it. If security beats you up, you are doing your job right. Get that beating on tape. Wake up. This is war. There's only one wrong in this. Only one, and that is losing.
If you should feel something during the interview, like you have some tears, could you just turn towards the camera?
Whoa, look at him.
This is it.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
To candy now, I swear to God.
This actually kind of matters, Jane. This country could go under. We're talking about people's lives.
You like to pretend you're not one of us. If you fight with monsters for too long, you become a monster.
Eddie, is this your neighborhood? This is where you live?
People will get hurt. What are you gonna do?
We are trying to save people's lives. These are the stakes. And I'm not gonna stand by and watch as this nation falls apart. This is no longer an election. This is a crisis.
We're going to shoot the commercial, por favor.
Llamas. This animal would lead us to prosperity.
Oh.
No, Marco!
It's like he killed himself rather than be in one of our commercials.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I'm a big fan of Sandra Bullock. I think she's compelling. And Billy Bob Thornton is a weirdo in real life, I'm sure, but he's very compelling too. And the rest of the actors, the Spanish-speaking actors, I don't know if they're actual Bolivians or other nationalities, but I thought they're pretty good too. And the guy who plays the candidate that she's trying to help, I don't know his name right off, but he's been in everything. He's great. But he also looks like a Spanish soap opera actor, so he's got that going for him. Like Spanish leading men kind of have that thing going on. So that's my housekeeping. Four movies, of which two of them I recommend. And two of them are, probably worth watching, maybe. Maybe skip 31. Nothing new there. Although, one of the bad guys in 31 is a Mexican midget Nazi. So there's
wow.
That. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, I was just going to comment that I probably won't see any of those movies. Although I did see The Invisible Man at the Performing Arts Center a while ago.
The actual movie? No. Hold on.
No, a play.
Like based on the H.G. Wells novel, is that what it is? Or is it more of a David Mamet?
No. No, it was based on the original book. I don't remember if it was an H.G. Wells book, but that sounds right.
Was it enjoyable?
Yeah, it was interesting. I think I remember having the same thought that you did. Like, he's not the hero of the movie.
No, it's hard to...
The play.
It's hard to, there is no real hero of the play, the movie, the mm-hmm. story. So, yeah, so that kind of falls flat for me. I kind of want someone to root for, but it's not him. So, who's next for housekeeping?
Boyfriend Jesse and I finished Twin Peaks the series and successfully watched Fire Walk with Me and all the 90 minutes of deleted scenes. So and that was an accomplishment.
What was the reaction?
So he agrees that the series ending was terrible, but necessary, I think he would say. The movie he thought was great, but also agreed it was very much a horror movie. It scared him in parts, which is about appropriate. It's about right. And the deleted scenes are pretty good. So up next is to go back to all the DVDs. And because you got me the box set of Blu-rays, we have all the added extra feature stuff that we'll go back and watch from each disc. Each disc has extra stuff, including a whole lot of David Lynch interviews. So...
You guys are going to be completionists in this, aren't you?
Well, we're prepping for the reboot, which starts in May.
Oh, I hope for your sake it's good.
Yeah, well, me too. It's, you know, I discovered the other night when we were watching, I looked up some things, and the character Bob died in 1995, I think. So it's going to be interesting how they manage to do that.
Well, are they jumping ahead in time, or are they...
No one knows. I don't know. But there's tons. I mean, if you look at the IMDb cast already, it's huge.
Did they get all the principals back or not?
Pretty much. The only one that glaringly seems glaringly obvious is missing is the character, the Harry Truman. They have Frank Truman, so they either have his brother or cousin or uncle or somebody, but Harry Truman doesn't return apparently. So that's what's been on the list for us to get that accomplished. And now I'm indoctrinating with the West Wing. So that's kind of fun. So
cool.
I love the West Wing. So I'll go back and watch that. And Drew may be interested to find out that an episode of the West Wing Weekly podcast has the author of Hamilton.
Oh, Lin-Manuel Miranda?
Yes, he does a West Wing rapping opening for one of the West Wing Weekly podcasts episodes. So you might check that out because it might amuse you.
That's funny. He had a small role in one of the episodes, right?
I don't know. Possibly. I
think he might have.
That is a guy that likes podcasts. He gets around on podcasts.
But other than that, I had an interesting day at work. On my way to work this morning, I was almost late, and then I parked in the parking garage and got into the elevator and got trapped in the elevator for 15 minutes. So that was not how I wanted to start my day.
Never good.
That's like 12 minutes past all-out panic.
Well, here's the thing, too. So luckily, it's a glass-backed elevator, so I'm facing the street, except I'm 6 floors up, so who's going to see me flailing and jumping up and down? Because it just faces another parking building. But I get in the elevator, and I turn around, and I push the one button, and the outer elevator doors close, and the inner elevator doors don't quite start to close, and then start closing really fast, like wham, and then back up from each other a little bit and wedge there. So they're about halfway closed and the elevator doesn't go anywhere. So thinking,
is there a phone in the elevator that you can you'd call for help?
Well, interesting. There's not a phone, but there's one of those emergency call boxes.
Oh.
Except that I pushed it and it didn't work.
Nice.
So there's a phone number on the certificate of the elevator to which I called, and that phone number didn't work. So it's now 6:35 this morning. I've been trapped in the elevator for about 10 minutes. I'm jumping up and down. I'm pushing the open button. I'm pushing the close button. I'm pushing the emergency button. I'm pushing the call button. I'm doing everything. And I'm thinking, I'm trying to figure out how I can MacGyver way to open the outer doors. But then I have that JCPenney elevator moment of the brain where I'm afraid to be touching the doors because I don't want to get a wedge between floors if the elevator suddenly lurches or something.
Exactly. So, yeah.
I'm like, oh, this is, I'm going to end up in a newspaper dead somehow. And they're not going to figure out what happened because it's just going to be me like sliced in half by the elevator. They're not going to know why. So I'm kind of just, I'm panicking a bit and I'm screaming inside my head and I'm at no point thinking like, maybe I should call the fire department or the police. Nowhere does that ever enter my mind. So I'm standing around trying to figure out what to do. And then I think I have to pee.
Exactly.
Oh no, I'm going to be that guy. So finally somebody, and because of my own, whatever it is, I get it from dad. I swear it's dad did this to me.
That you have to pee all the time? That may be genetic.
No. Just let me finish the story, crap head.
God.
Because I'm worried about getting door dings and worried about where I park in the garage. I didn't park on the fourth floor of the garage. And by the way, the way you enter this parking garage, you only get access to every other floor from one street. So the second floor had too much too many people. I couldn't find a parking spot I was comfortable in. The fourth floor was the same. And so I went to the sixth floor where nobody had parked yet. So I got to park my vehicle. So there was only one person that could park next to me. And the space is far enough over that they couldn't give me a door ding. And luckily, the space I picked is right next to the elevator. So I just had to wait for somebody else eventually to be on the sixth floor to come to that elevator. Which, mercifully, 5 more minutes passed and somebody did come and push the call button and the outer doors opened. And then I leapt out like I was some kind of cheetah after a squirrel or something, or whatever cheetahs chase.
Did you scare the crap out of them?
I did.
And did you let them go into the elevator?
No. The elevator actually wouldn't work after that, because after about 5 minutes of the door not fully closing, the car alarm in the elevator went off and started buzzing. It wouldn't shut off.
Well, at least that would alert somebody that there's a problem. I was going to suggest, could you have hit your panic button on your remote on your car to have that go off?
Oh, I could have. I didn't think of that either. Yeah. No. So that was my day. That was like, oh, okay. God.
No, thank you.
Yeah. If it had been a closed elevator car where I couldn't have seen anything, I would have freaked the fuck out.
We have an elevator that goes, it's just a two-story building. So the elevator only has two stops. But because one of my coworkers, well, several of us at various times use the elevator instead of using the stairs. But she has a whole bunch of stuff that she totes with her, like in a rolly bag. So she uses the elevator most of the time. And so I got a call from her. She had 6 o'clock lunch. She had last lunch, so she got to go home an hour before the rest of us. And she calls 911 from the elevator, gets me, because the elevator is stopped between floors and it's starting to bounce up and down.
Oh, God.
And she is not having a good day about it. She was not a happy camper.
Did you utilize your training and just be a total dick to her about calling the emergency number when she could have called the non-emergency number?
Yeah, exactly. No, I didn't. No. I transferred her to the fire department, and we were going to send someone out to go and help her out of it. But then as we were on the phone, the doors, it settled like about an inch below, or maybe an inch above, one of the two, the on a level, and the doors went open. She's like, I'm on the phone with you. I'm jumping out of the car right now. She had the JCPenney thought too, but luckily she got out and she was not a happy camper. But they got the elevator technicians out there right away, which was nice.
Yeah, that's some nightmare horror stuff right there is what it is.
Well, the JCPenney story to which we referred was in Anchorage in the 80s, was it? There was...
I think so.
It was
early 90s?
I can't remember if I was working in the hotel when it happened. Could have been. Anyway, in an old parking garage elevator, probably installed in the, 50s, 60s? There were people that... So how did it work? The elevator just started moving when there were people crossing the threshold, and it crushed one woman to death with the other people trapped inside the car?
My memory was someone tried to do the put the arm in to open the doors back up, except the doors just closed, and then the car moved.
Well, but it wasn't just the arm. It killed a lady who was like half inside and half outside the car for the entire time they had to rescue the people out of there. I'll have to look up the actual story, and we'll put a link to it in the notes.
It sounds like it's right out of a horror movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So whenever any of us, anybody that lived in Anchorage at the time, we don't just like willy-nilly jump out of an elevator door without thinking about that. To this day, I never leave an elevator without thinking about that.
Yeah. I if doors are closing, I just let them close. I don't try and beat the car.
So anything else, Brother Jay?
Not for me.
Okay. Drew?
I finished Penny Dreadful.
Oh, I've heard it's good.
It's pretty good. The first season is certainly the best. And there's only 3 seasons and 10 or less episodes each season. So it can go pretty quickly. But yeah, it's pretty decent. Good performances. There's an ex-Bond in it. He's good.
Period piece?
Yes, like it's got so many like gothic horror references, and they're all sort of reimagined. So it's pretty interesting.
But by the way, the JCPenney elevator accident was October 1st, 1991.
Wow, you called it. No kidding. Do you have a link to it somewhere?
I do. Would you like it?
Can you don't send it to my phone. Send it to my email if you can. Or send it to notes at not in a creepy way. Whatever. Anybody who wants to send notes, send it to notes at not in a creepy way. Send your feedback to show at notinacreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.